G'day and welcome back to another episode of the Humans of Agriculture podcast. I'm your host, as always, Ollie Lalive, and thank you so much for joining us this week. This episode was recorded on Wadawurrung country down in Geelong in southwest Victoria, and as part of our Women in Agriculture Month. If you haven't heard, we are actually hosting an event in partnership with Nutrien Ag Solutions in Melbourne. It's going to be a live podcast recording on the 29th of March with three absolutely incredible women who are all super passionate about ag. And guess what? Well, it's free to attend. So if you're around the area, it's going to kick off at 5, finish up at about 7. Come on down. All the details are on our website. Now, my next guest is Sally Jones. She's one of Gippsland's finest humans that exist. She grew up on a property near Lake's Entrance, then got the internal call to try out city life. It was when her father passed away from suicide in 2016 that Sally returned to the farm. And of course, that's where the story of Gippsland Jersey began. Sally is incredibly open, she's honest, and we can't wait for you to hear more about her story, the passion she's got for the dairy industry, and her little thriving business called Gippsland Jersey. In this episode, we do cover themes of suicide and mental health. There are links to Lifeline, and if this conversation sparks anything within you, please know that there are helplines out there. So either reach out to Lifeline, this is a conversation starter, all those details are in our show notes. Let's jump into it. I think you probably shared your story enough, Sally.
Yeah, definitely.
In a few places.
I know, but you know what? I go walking sometimes and I have some space and I think to myself, well, wow, there's another layer there and there's another layer there. And I think with the journey that I have been on, it's been, you know, pretty out there. I think a lot of people probably don't, you know, deal with the suicide of their father in the way that I have. I was, you know, hit the ground running and just, I guess, wanted to talk about it and wanted to share it. And, you know, there was a lot of other stuff going on with the dairy crisis at the time. It was like a couple of weeks after Dad died. And there was, you know, other people in our community suiciding over what had happened. So it was pretty full on and it was quite triggering. And I'm, you know, very fortunate to be very, you know, loved by the community in terms of I feel the love by the community. So within the Warragul Farmers Market, you know, that community and how I guess the coming of all of the pieces after Dad died was I just knew that there had to be some good that came out of this. Like it couldn't be left like a negative thing. And I think not talking about something sometimes is like the elephant in the room. So there's no shame in my dad's death. And I, on, you know, day two of him dying, I remember talking to someone, he was like a pastor of a church, and he just came up to me and he said, Sally, you know, your dad's death was an illness. It's not something to be ashamed of. And it, like, that released me and I was like, oh great, you know, I can move on and really get into it. And, you know, Dad was such a pioneer in the dairy industry, and I'm so grateful for him in terms of paving the way for what we've been able to create.
What do you reckon has been, obviously that is incredibly challenging for you, but you've also then got Gippsland Jersey and your business up and going. What would you say has been, if there is one moment or time in your life that has been most, I guess, forming for you and a driver?
Yeah, so Dad's death was definitely the biggest life-defining moment, I think, for me, just because you'd never expect that to happen to you. You hear about it, you know, it's always someone else's story. So when that happened, that was absolutely huge and certainly rocked my boat. You know, obviously I've got three kids and the birth of each child is life-defining as well. All of those milestones, I guess, that I've been lucky to have. But I think in terms of experiencing the grief and the tragedy and whatever those emotions, I think, can't be understood until you have that experience for yourself. And the empathy and all of those things, like I see my dad's death, I'm not, it's gonna sound funny, but I'm not thankful, but I'm grateful of the experiences of going through that process. And I believe that creating Gippsland Jersey and funneling that energy into creating something positive has been so healing for me. And I do feel, it's probably saved me thousands of dollars in therapy with just having the freedom to, just knowing my why and knowing that, I think in dairy especially, the industry has always been about price taking, and dairy farming is always, I think down the bottom of the rung. They probably work the hardest and get paid the less, the least. But so I think my passion and my desire in terms of wanting to create change within dairy probably comes from my dad. Well, it does come from my dad and being surrounded by that, because when I was 3 years old, he decided that he would value add to the milk that he was producing on our dairy farm in Lakes Entrance. And that, has had such a ripple effect within my whole entire life and all consuming. But it's been very eye-opening. So dad was all about, I, as a dairy farmer, want to be paid a fair price for my milk. And that's one of the key pillars of Gippsland Jersey.
One other question before we, I'm super keen to jump into Gippsland Jersey and chat to everything about that. When you've had your bad days, and I guess where maybe in the moments after your old man passed away, like how do you actually get yourself back on track and deal with it? Or maybe in hindsight, didn't deal with it?
Oh, I still remember the moment in time when I found out that he had died. So it was pretty full. He went missing and psychotic over a 3 year period, but was so out of his character, because for all of the time that I've ever known my dad, he was such a strong pillar of strength. And I knew, his stance on suicide. I knew that, he wasn't, he didn't think, he couldn't understand it. We had a staff member whose son suicided a couple of years previously, and I remember having very deep conversations with my dad about that and exploring it, and he just still couldn't understand why anyone would ever do that to themselves. Anyway, I remember it was the 22nd of March, because it was my little boy Max Michael's birthday, and he was named after my dad. So it was like 7 o'clock in the morning, and we had so many SES and police, and it was dog squad and helicopters and all of those things. It was very full on, and they'd sort of called off the search the night before because it had started raining, and they were coming back and starting sort of at daylight. And where I was standing, which was near the factory and over the dam, was divers going to the dam, and they radioed through to say they'd found him. And I was like, oh, he must have fallen down a wombat hole or something like that, because that's all night we kept thinking, no, he wouldn't. There's this, he's had an accident or something's happened on the farm. But no, when it came back, it was like, no, he's himself in a tree. And I just remember that absolutely, like, it just takes your breath away, and there's something that happens in your stomach, and then you forget what happens after that. Like, I don't know, I can't really recall. My emotions, because clearly I'd never experienced that before, and it was just devastation to the epitome. And gather your thoughts. I was like, I can't believe this has happened. Take me to the place, And the police were like, oh, no, we can't sort of do that and whatnot. And anyway, a few hours after, we, did go to the place, and it was just like, oh, it's cutting, but it was just like, I want that whole day just being wiped out. And
Just lost you, Sally.
all of us four kids spoke as well at the funeral. And then, yeah, I was so lucky to have like an amazing group of women that surrounded me, and they cooked meals and they did my washing and took my kids. And I just remember like lying in bed, like just quite devastated about the whole entire thing and not being motivated. And then, life goes on. Life goes on. And so I remember, just getting on with life. I'm not sure. And then maybe it was like a few weeks after that, there was the Farm World. It was the show, and my friend Steve Ronald, who's a dairy farmer, he was at the event, and he was saying, hey, I want a value add to my milk. And he sort of had a conversation around that. And then it was like maybe a week after that we were having coffees and whatnot. And then, yeah, 3 months later we had milk in a bottle.
And the rest has been history.
Yep, the rest is like, right. The little project that I guess I went into to heal myself and to channel that grief into has well and truly been healed. And now I'm left with, this thing I've created, it's been amazing. Like that journey has been amazing. And it's now, it'll be 7 years in September 2023 since we created Gippsland Jersey. And we're on the treadmill now. You can't get off.
Yeah, well, the beast, which is Gippsland Jersey. But I want to ask a question. This influence of agriculture, you mentioned before, was it at 3 years old your dad started to value add? Like, what is your earliest memory around ag that I guess you go back to that drives your why today?
Good question, because I mean, just growing up, and I think it is such a unique, special thing to grow up on a farm, and in particularly a dairy farm, because it is so full on, it never stops. And my memory is just being in the milking shed with my pop or my dad or whoever. Like it was it was all about family, and we all knew how to work hard. And I certainly had my favorite cow named Lucy, and I love milking her. And I don't know, it's just something about being able to create. Like you look after the animals, and then they give you this milk, and then it goes into the, and then it goes into the factory, and then we create this beautiful ice cream, and then I would literally serve it at the ice cream parlor. Connection for me, it's so unique. To have those extra steps in the process of being a primary producer, and very unique. And the satisfaction of, the whole entire process, seeing it all come together with the end result, and then getting that immediate feedback from the consumer and people talking about the ice cream that was made on the farm. Like it was a very unique situation. And I just, the freedom you have growing up on a farm. Well, I didn't actually go to school until grade six either, so that was maybe another big thing that was just, it was just so much freedom.
What were you doing?
Good point, Ollie. Mum employed a tutor for us that was able to manage her out of the role of school teaching, and just told her that, there was more important things to do. So I don't know, I think she actually did the schoolwork and we sent it off. Like we were enrolled for rural correspondence. We did, qualify for that. But it was a bit of a rude shock when you got to got to school in grade six, and it was like, oh, times tables, haven't learnt that. Not a very good speller. All right. Yeah. So it's been, it's been a challenge, but I feel like it's been, that opportunity to not have maybe a formal education in terms of, being told how to think. Maybe my brain has been too free range, which I know it's frustrating for people around me sometimes because it's like, can she just shut up? Can she just have some structure about things? But
I don't know if that's just the non-schooling part, because I think that I've probably got a lot of those similarities. So maybe I was present at school physically, but maybe not mentally. So we're probably at the
yes.
same place.
Oh, dear.
What's running through my head here is where you are in Gippsland isn't that remote or anything, is
No, it's not. It's not like we're on the outback. Hang on 2 seconds. So I've got a milk delivery just rocking up. Hang on 2 seconds. Sorry,
Yeah,
Ollie.
you're right.
Hello. How are you? Do you mind popping the milk in the Sorry, Ollie.
No, you're right. I reckon this is actually awesome.
Oh.
Can safely say that's the first time I've ever recorded a podcast or done some content where we've been interrupted by the milk delivery.
Oh.
So, where you are, grew up in and around Lakes Entrance. It wasn't actually school of the air, wasn't necessary. Like, how far were you actually from town and from the closest school?
So from the house to the beach, hitting the water is 4 kilometers.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. Like we had the best of both worlds. Of when you're on the farm, you could be in the middle of nowhere, but yeah, literally it's 4 Ks and you're there, you're in the water. So super special location, but in saying that, it's still 4 hours east of Melbourne.
And you're a very bubbly and outgoing person, so I'm presuming, although you didn't go to school till year six, which is just still blowing my mind, you did have a bit of a social life and hung out with other kids.
Yeah, well, on the farm, like as I said, we had this big family situation. So my cousins and my grandparents, and we're like sort of two sets of cousins, grandparents were all living. We had obviously some staff. We had the shop, so we're working. Like, I started working when I was apparently 4 years old, wiping tables and getting tips from customers. So, I guess yeah, work had started it very early, and so I don't think there was any issues with being socially engaged. Played sport, did all that sort of stuff, but yeah, just didn't do the school part.
Sounds pretty good. So then, with this childhood and growing up on the farm, you actually went away from agriculture and away from the Gippsland area. So what was driving that for you?
Yeah, so then by the time I'd hit year 12, I thought, well, I'm done with Gippsland and with the dairy, because I think when you do grow up in a
Now, I do apologise for this bit, but Sally actually dropped off not long after that milk tanker turned up, and we had to push the rest of the recording through to the next day. So we tried to pick up where we left off, but bear with us as we jump back into it. Well, do we just follow on from
where
where we started yesterday? Well, I
Yep,
think we
we
should, because
can.
then we'll work out if this thing's going to work or not, or if as soon as we start talking about you leaving Gippsland, it starts to break up, we'll be like, okay, we'll just avoid that but I think, yeah, what was interesting, and what I wanted to know is obviously Gippsland had played such a huge part in your life up until a point. So what was the reasons behind, I guess, turning your back on it a little bit, if we can use those words?
Yeah, I think I've always been really proud about growing up in Gippsland. I don't think I was ever, running away as such, but I think just from it was an opportunity to get out of Gippsland and experience something else. Because often when we do grow up in rural communities, it's very comfortable, I think. So being a nobody in a big city, you have to figure out who you are and who what makes Sally Jones, or what makes anybody that has come. So you need to pave your own way. So it was cool. I
basically just said yes to heaps of things and got involved and met a stack of people. And yeah, through uni, I got a position at one of Melbourne's best boutique PR agencies that was looking after the Grand Prix and Foster's and Berry Juice and all those things. And I realized how the media played a role in telling brand stories. And I was only there probably 18 months or whatnot. And there was an incredible group of women that were working in the agency that really took me under their wing. And I'll be forever grateful because I'm still friends with these girls and they're so encouraging. And when the time came for me to say, look, I'm heading off back to Gippsland, they've certainly, you know, cheering me on the sides from Melbourne and have provided some opportunities and whatnot over the years.
A little bit of PR in the early days.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, that is the problem with people in rural areas. They have amazing stories to tell, but there's no platform, or there hasn't been up until, I guess, social media and whatnot. And podcasts and things like that have come along, but they haven't told their stories or they don't think they're special. So I think that was probably my experience. I'm like, wow, people in the city, like after living there, I'm like, they actually want to know what's happening on a farm level and meet the people that, you know, are making their food, exactly what your podcast is on about, you know, humans of agriculture. Who are the people? Who are the basics?
And I wish we could do so much more. I think.
Yeah.
It is funny, and it's definitely something that, like, I've learned through all of this. And it's, I think you can hear from CEOs and industry leaders, and they absolutely have their time and their place. But in terms of the content, which does the best for us, is what I like to call like the extraordinary, because like to so many people in like our communities and circles and things, people just view themselves as ordinary. But then you start chatting to it and to others, they're like, oh my God, this person is extraordinary. Like, how is that person a mum, a personal trainer, a distance education teacher, a farmer? Like, how on earth is there enough hours in the day for that person to do what they do? And even in your camp as well, I think, like, startup founder and mental health advocate going into a leadership program. I was going to say still a mum, always a mum.
Like, oh, yeah.
It's insane just how much people like yourself can fit in.
Yeah, sometimes there's not a lot of sleep, right? So it's a juggle, and it is what it is.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
I think, but then when you sort of start planning, and this is probably my issue, is that when you think, righto, I've got this and this and this coming up, and then I have this absolute freeze situation where I can't plan and I can't organize. Like today, I've just sent out a message to my three or four staff saying, hey guys, I need you all on the weekend. Who's available? Like last minute queen. I am just, until it gets to the critical time, then I'm like action, you know, I'm at my best at the last minute.
Cool under pressure as well.
Yeah. Yep. Pretty good. Like I am at my best when the pressure's on and it's last minute. So
do you get to after a morning like today and you're running around and somehow you always find a way? Are you like, next time or next week, I'm going to be more organized, or have you just given up on that?
I have so much desire. And I think, you know, my goal for this year is to like, okay, let's just do a little bit of personal development on how to time manage. But anyway, I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But, you know, I think you have to be able to multitask. So this morning, you know, you have to make sure that the spaghetti bolognese is in the pot. It's done. It's like, took me 5 minutes. Dinner's done. I know that's sorted. I'm doing school lunches. I'm on the phone taking a few, you know, orders for milk or whatever. Just get it done. So the ability of, I think, you know, now we have the ear pods and the mobile phone and we can be anywhere and still working is pretty, it's cool, but it's intense. And I think when I think about myself and self-care and all of the things that I sort of bang on about and keeping yourself mentally healthy, I have to sort of check in and go, oh, am I okay? You know, sometimes I think our minds are like, we don't get any downtime. It's just race to the next thing. And sometimes I feel like we live in a world where you can never really fully be reflective or appreciative or thankful for what's just happened because you're on to the next thing already. It's such a high pace. So that's also another goal, is to try and, you know, step back and to go back to journaling. Because I used to love it when I had a bit more time and I used to do some journaling, do my exercise, eat really cleanly. And then you feel like if you got those things sorted, that's the sort of the basics of keeping yourself healthy, I think.
Mm. Well, you're going to be streets ahead if you're already journaling. On that, it's so funny. One of my goals this year, and I'll try and keep them pretty basic every year, but was around like, to relish the moments and the opportunities that we're creating. Because I think, to your point there, like, it's so quickly to forget of, and this was, I think, where I have caught myself in a slump, and either people around me or family or friends are like, Ollie, just look at like what has actually happened like through Humans of Agriculture so far, and stop being so just like, oh, I've got to get to, this is happening in June or July or August or whatever it might be. I'm interested. I was just jumping back a slight question. The chaos side of things. Mm. So I'm guessing you're similar to me in terms of you're really good at managing yourself and in terms of the tasks and things that you need to do. How have you done that when in your growing team?
I'm first to admit I am not a good, I consider myself a leader, but I don't really consider myself a good leader of people. I'm not everybody's cup of tea. Like I'm not able to provide what I feel like people sometimes need of a leader. So I must admit, you know, I think it's about selecting the right people around you that, you know, can work with you. They're pretty self-managed themselves because I'm flat out to disorganize myself, you know, not anybody else. So what we've done though in the last couple of years is put some structure within our business. So putting like the CRM, so everything and all of our customers are sort of out of my head. They're on, you know, a business that, you know, we have 400 customers or whatever, like they can't all live in my head. I can't have the key relationship with all of them. It has to be shared around. So putting in, you know, new telephone systems, like all of these things just take the load off for me. So yeah, we're always progressing and always moving forward, which I think that and then enables you to manage your staff in a way that's, you know, you don't have to watch. Like we live in a day and age where, look, people work remotely, don't they? Like it's not old school, back in the office, have meetings and whatnot. But I must admit that this whole face-to-face is so much more effective than just, you know, we're always texting or messaging or whatever. It's just a bit rubbish.
I'm really curious, how have you gone with letting go of that? 400 customers is insane, but because Gippsland Jersey is so much Sally Jones of your blood, sweat, tears, everything else that's gone into creating that, like how have you gone with actually being okay with other people taking the lead on that and not protecting it and squeezing it to death?
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm all for just like, take it off me. Yeah, it's been a nice little journey because it's not just a rude awakening. I'm first to admit, I, you know, we hear from customers or chefs or whatever that ring and say, oh, we actually use your product. And I do have to get over myself and think, well, I used to really pride myself on knowing all about who they were and having those. And now I'm just like, I'm sorry. I just can't be across at all. But yeah, like I do recognize that the brand has probably been a little bit built on me and my voice and the things like that. And it's not probably sustainable going into the future. Because if you want to scale, you just, it can't be all pinged, you know, on me sort of thing. And I don't want it to be either. And so often because I have put myself out there and probably in the early days, you know, it's been I look at back at things I've written or posted or said or whatever, I'm thinking, wow, like, oh, did I really say that? And a little bit more, yeah, just probably a little bit more protective of that sort of stuff. Not clothes, because that's not who I am, but just, you know, also other competitors within the space. Like, I know that they're watching. And, yeah, but I guess what you can't beat in this day and age is just being authentic and showing up. And a lot of big brands that want to pretend that they are small boutique, you know, pharma brands and put pharma faces on milk bottles and things like that, consumers see through it, and the consumers are smart these days. And, you know, for example, Coles, we supply Coles and Woolies, and we met with them, and, you know, there's no secret that they buy direct from farmers now. I think they have 60 dairy farms that they go direct to, and they pay a very good price. And a lot of farms are signing up for it. But I do have a real problem with the major supermarkets being in control of our food system and having the power. You know, no longer are they just a shelf for brands to stock. They actually control the whole food system now. And that's scary for me. And I don't believe that's good. It's, you know, we do not want monopolies in our food system.
And so why is that, like, to you?
Because they wield too much power. So once they get everybody, you know, involved, signed up for contracts and things like that, well, you know, people are locked in and you can't move. And so I believe we need a free food system. Like, we need to be able to, you know, what happens if, you know, once again, dairy farmers lock into Coles? Yeah, it's great milk price, whatnot, and they have to lock in for 3 years. But what happens if the price of milk jacks up to, you know, $15? Like, who knows? We don't know, but I think we've gone past that day and age of, yeah, really locking into contracts. We should be able to, everybody should have the freedom to pay what's right. Because, you know, we look at the milk crisis and what happened there, and then the dairy industry just hasn't had a good run. But finally they are getting paid well, and I am seeing just in my conversations that everybody's, you know, they're pretty happy. And I think mental health and the finances are pretty tightly connected at sometimes. I think it's from my research, it's not just my research. It was an academic paper that I read a couple of years ago, and it just said, yeah, mental health in rural men is connected to finances and relationships. So, but equal sort of part. And it's interesting.
It definitely makes sense.
Hi, I'm Pia, horticulture and sugar analyst at Rabobank, and I'm here to share our latest insights on Australia's vegetable market. Did you know in 2023, Australia produced over $5.8 billion worth of vegetables, though only 4.3% of this was exported? Like many other countries, the Australian vegetable industry relies mostly on its domestic market. In fact, only 7% of global vegetables produced are traded between countries. But we are starting to see that trend change. Global trade is growing at a faster rate than production, and countries with low-cost production are seeing the highest growth rates. You can learn more about trends in the vegetable market on our latest Rabo Research Australia podcast, Mapping World Vegetable Trade, or reach out to me via the Rabobank Australia social media channels to learn more.
Let's chat a little bit about the Gippsland jersey story, because I'm sure there's a huge number of our listeners who actually don't know anything about it, which is exciting. So Gippsland jersey, you chatted about, I guess, the influence. Your old man was a value adder from the very early years. And during uni, you used to work at the Warragul Farmers Markets. But tell me how and when this idea of Gippsland jersey came about.
Yeah. Oh, as I said, I just, I've always loved dairy industry. I sort of thought that chapter was finished. The the way it came about was that I did move to Warrigal and started a farmer's market up, and it was, buzzing along, great community. My dad had a mental health battle for 3 years, and tragically, he ended his own life in 2016, which was absolutely tragic. And then it was a couple of weeks after that, the dairy crisis happened, and through Warrigal Farmers Market and the social media pages, people within our local community were asking what milk should they buy to actually support the dairy industry, and they wanted to support the local ones. And there was no answers, because the supermarkets are actually stocked full of internationally owned brands. Yes, it's local, potentially local milk that's going into those bottles, but there's no economic value necessarily of the profit staying in Australia. So Steve Ronalds, who's a dairy farmer in Jindavik, he lost out in the dairy crisis, and we sort of came together and had a couple of coffees, and we decided that we'd start a milk brand. He really wanted to value add to his milk. He was questioning why he would stay in the industry. And I think because I was so full of grief, I wanted to channel that into creating something good, because my dad was such a pioneer in the space, and I probably didn't know where else to put myself. So we created a brand. It has three pillars. One, that farmers have to be paid a fair price. Like, what happened in the dairy crisis was just so wrong. So that social justice, coming out, which is certainly a family trait, I think. And then the second pillar is around creating social change in rural mental health. And the third pillar is kindness, which is a really unique, I guess, pillar to put into a brand and set of values. But it's really important to both Steve and I, because it costs nothing, and it's the way we choose to conduct our business. And we also know that when kindness can change the game up, and it can set you on a different path, and we can all choose how we respond to situations. So it's, we've stuck to those pillars. We've now processing our milk back in my dad's factory that he built back in the 80s, so back on my family farm in Lakes Entrance, and we process three times a week, and we make a whole range of dairy products, obviously focusing on that high-fat Jersey stuff, so cultured butter, which is absolutely delicious, and we can't make enough. We need to sell more light milk so that we can make more butter. But nobody wants to drink light milk these days. Full fat is back.
Is it?
And it's back. We can hardly give light milk away,
Really?
It's interesting. Like, things go in trends, I believe. And the light milk in Australia has declined. So there we go. And then we have cultured sour cream and buttermilk, and we've had play around with some other products that are hopefully going to come to market soon. But yeah, it's the Jersey milk, I think, deserves its own category in Australia. And we're about wanting to, I guess, educate the consumer around how good Jersey milk is. It's higher in protein, it's higher in fat. The taste itself, the feedback we get is that it tastes like milk used to taste. And people, I think, have had maybe experiences of drinking milk out of vats and whatnot of growing up, and they absolutely love it. Our packaging is super premium, and it's metallic, gold, and it certainly stands out, I think, on the supermarket shelves as premium product, and it is a premium price. And the consumers are happy to pay that little bit extra, knowing that the milk that they are getting, they know who the owners are, that it's Australian owned, that we do everything in Gippsland. We even buy our cardboard boxes here. So we choose to try and support local as much as we can. And I think, when you go, oh yeah, support local, and that word gets thrown around a lot, but that $1 that's spent in a rural community gets turned over nine times. And it is, yeah, if we want strong rural economies, then let's spend our money locally.
This is interesting. Where have you had to compromise or sacrifice at different times? Or maybe what have been the challenges that have come up because of, I guess, your philosophy around supporting local?
Oh, look, so we can't obviously buy plastic bottles in Gippsland, but we get them just in Melbourne and bring them down. But yeah, I mean, look, we use a little local family-owned milk tanker company. We could probably get it much cheaper by going through a big, you know, one of those bigger ones, but we've chosen to do that. Even the location of our factory is not great because we're hauling the milk down and we're spending probably $500,000 on milk tankers to be processing that. So that's our, you know, that's our issue that we have to absorb. And I guess that is, you know, that I guess we're choosing to do it a little bit of a hard way, and the price of our milk is a bit more expensive. But look, yeah, everything we do is like, well, is it Australian made? Let's start there, and then if we can get it locally, we'll choose local. But there is little bits of extra costs involved for sure. Yeah.
You were involved in Rocket Seed, and I reckon that's probably where I first came across you. Mm. God, that was many moons ago, wasn't it? And when you were building Gippsland Jersey and went into the Rocket Cedar Accelerator program, what did the business kind of look like? And then how has it picked up over the years?
Yeah, anyone that's starting a business, I would highly recommend getting involved in some sort of accelerator program or business, you know. you know, we were involved in Rocket Cedar at the start. So we trekked down to Melbourne every week and went to school, I guess, and we just
packed lunch and all.
Of, I guess hey,
packed lunch and all.
We packed our aunt caught the train down, and it was the interesting thing was being surrounded by a cohort of other people all in the same boat that were all starting out, and we got, I guess it was just such an opportunity to have some structures put in place or made us think about certain things that we may not have. And the one big thing that we learned at Rocket Cedar was know your why. And we knew our why, but we didn't probably know how to present it. And we had to pitch every single week and keep telling our story over and over again of who you are and why people should basically buy from you. And I found it really, you know, just, oh, are we doing this again for sort of thing. But that repetitive thing, I think, has certainly stood us in good stead and probably just opened doors and given us opportunities from day one. The network is everything, I think. So, you know, we're pretty insular down here in Gippsland, and then once you get to Melbourne, things really, you know, it's the bigger fish tank down there. So it was an amazing opportunity.
Because I remember seeing, was it a caravan that you started Gippsland Jersey out of with milkshakes and things?
Yeah. So the first thing we did in Gippsland Jersey when we started was we got an old caravan and we gutted it and we put in some milkshake makers and we hit the road and we hit events just to fly the flag because we didn't have any money when we started. And in fact, we didn't spend a dollar on marketing or advertising probably until about 2 years ago, simply because we didn't have money. And that caravan and the amount of milkshakes that we've poured out of it has been awesome. And it's just a great opportunity. And I guess it's a moving billboard. People see it and people get to try the product and they love it.
And on the brand taste, because I find that really interesting that you didn't spend any money on marketing over the first 5 or 6 years. So
yeah,
I'm guessing lots of thought that went into the brand, the denim jackets, the everything that sits in that.
Yeah, I think we just sort of tried to get as much branding on things as we could, and the use of social media was our absolute number one tool. And probably the other thing that we did do was we crowdfunded to get my dad's milk factory opening. And we had no idea that would cause a campaign, a promotional campaign. We actually just needed the funds to actually get the factory up and going. So we raised $110,000 in 3 weeks by asking people to pre-purchase bottles of milk. And it was overwhelming and so humbling. And but in return, like the awareness of our brand, because it got shared, it went quite viral and we got a little bit of media and stuff about it. And I think that stepping stone indirectly had quite a big impact. And it was out of necessity. It wasn't planned and going, oh, great, you know, if we do this, we're going to get, you know, attention or whatever. Like, it wasn't about that. But incidentally, that's what did happen, because we had no idea what even crowdfunding was. It was just, it was through Rocket Seeder, I think, that maybe the concept got suggested to us. And we were like, oh, all right, we'll just sign up to this platform and banged a video up. And I remember staying up, like Steve and I were up, like on the phone to each other till midnight going, I think we can load this up. Like, you know, how do we do this? And then by the next morning, it was just like flying. It was like, oh, look at it go, you know, and the total kept going up and up and up. And that money, like, we used every single cent of it to spaghetti strap a milk processing plant that then enabled us to keep going with our business, which was incredible.
Did everyone get their milk in the end, or were some people happy to buy like a $10 bottle of milk and go, you know what, I've just done something good?
Yeah, so one of the cafes in town, he put 10 grand of milk down on the line. Like, he prepaid $10,000.
What a legend.
Absolute legend. So yeah, shout out to Albert and Co. in Lakes Entrance for that.
Hello, Albert.
Amazing gift. Yeah. But honestly, not many people decided to claim it back. And so the whole thing, you know, it was just, as I said to you, it was very humbling. And, you know, we were just like, thank you very much. Like, it was an amazing gift to us, and we wouldn't have been able to do it just because at the time we had no credit rating and we had no money to do it. Still don't have money, but that's, you know, that's just business.
Getting
isn't
a credit
it?
Rating.
getting a credit rating and a shout out to CommBank as well, because they have backed us from day one when we were a nobody, and we had a really good broker who understood us and backed us. And without that financial piece of the business and having good people having advice, like our accountant and whatnot, we consider them part of our team, you know. Very important.
It's amazing. I think for me as well, I got put onto an accountant through a friend, and I literally would count Nathan as 100% part of our team, because I'll call and be like, so this is what I'm thinking. Or like when it came to, say, when I got to the state, it was September last year, and I was like, I think I want to hire staff. And then a quick phone call with him, and then he's put together an Excel spreadsheet and everything. Like, but surrounding yourself with people like that, game changers.
Yeah, 100%. Aren't their skills just awesome? Like with the Excel, you're speaking a different language to me. But anyway.
And half the time I feel like with those people, it's literally just having someone to talk to.
Yeah.
I love the three pillars you've got around the fair price for your farmers that you guys are working with.
Yeah.
The social change around mental health and kindness, and jumping into them a little bit more as you've grown the business and impact and having an impact. I guess, how important is it to be able to build a successful business in order to then be able to do the desired impact? And at times, like, how have you balanced that between wanting to, I guess, do more, but actually going, you know what, business comes first?
Well, without a successful business, we can't do any of these things. So definitely there has to come, you know, we have to make sure we're being profitable. We had a few partnerships. So the Lakes Complete Health, I think that's the name. I think that's how I've said it. Maybe not quote me on that. We have had a couple of partnerships with some health agencies that have come on board to help us fund this calendar that we do every year, which tells 12 Gippsland dairy farmers' stories. And by the end of next year, we'll have covered 10% of Gippsland dairy farmers, which is cool. And they've all got their own story to share. And some of them have, you know, never put themselves out there before or, you know, had someone come and ask them questions. So it's been an absolute privilege for me. And so I think for me, it was quite a cathartic process to do the calendar. Something that is my favorite part of Gippsland Jersey is that calendar and putting it together every year, because they open up their homes and their kitchen tables and we sit down and we have good chats about the heart stuff, and it's the real stuff, and oh, it's a beautiful thing. And I'm, yeah, I just absolutely love it. And I think for them as well, like, I hope that, well, the feedback has been exactly the process as well, and for them to be seen and heard and to have their photos taken and a printed document, and there's a video and whatnot that goes with it, it's amazing. Anyway, today, you know, one of the calendar participants is Joe Maghetto, and I got in touch with him very straight after he had attempted to take his own life. He was carrying around a bullet in his pocket and he wanted to put it through his head because he was done with life. And thankfully he didn't do that, and he's, you know, lives to tell his tale. And boy, is it, it's an amazing story. And today he's been recognized. Well, someone's painted an Archibald Prize painting that's being revealed of him because of his work in rural mental health. And
wow,
it's massive. And, you know, he says that he's probably saved five people's lives, other farmers' lives, by him speaking up about it. So that ripple effect of him sharing his story and then other people knowing that he's a person that I could contact and have a talk to, and that he's been able to then put them in contact with getting the right help, is, you know, work that a lot of agencies can't do. Because I think there's definitely no magic pill for mental health and you know, solving that huge health issue. But at the end of the day, people need people. And it's about, showing up for them and hearing them and just getting alongside them and being on the journey.
Yeah, there absolutely is no magic pill. But God, you guys are doing an amazing job down there in Gippsland, in that big community.
Ollie, there's more that we want to do. So the next stage for us, for Steve and I, is that if we can, the dream, and I think it's probably maybe a little bit more my dream than Steve's dream, is that we can create a well farm. And a well farm is what happens over in the European countries. So over in Holland, for example, apparently there's thousands of these farms, and they are a place, they're a functioning farm, and people that are unwell come to these farms and then they're tapped into the right services to get support. But they're not like sitting out in a psych ward or a, you know, health retreat. It's more than that, but it's where people are feeling comfortable and they have purpose and they're able to heal themselves and go on that journey. And that's what we wanted for my dad when he wasn't well.
Mm.
We wanted to send him to a place he was going to get the help and the support for him to get through and navigate these tricky times. But there is nothing available in Australia. And, you know, we know from my reading and researching that these wellness farms work in Europe. So why don't we have them in Australia? And we would love to roll out a pilot, you know, of this, you know, concept.
Yeah, that sounds incredible. I'm going to have to go and look them up. Another area that you are incredibly passionate about is women in ag and your women in Gippsland. What have you seen in your time being back involved in the dairy industry, and what's changing around women in agriculture and the role women play?
Yeah, look, I was dumbfounded to find out that women weren't recognised as farmers until 1992, when I went through the Invisible Farmer Project with the Melbourne Museum. And, you know, when you Google farmers, you just see males everywhere. But the definition of farmers now has changed thanks to the good work of, you know, some people that have got in there and made sure that women are recognised for the work that they do. And I think we have come a long way, and women play such an important role in agriculture, and especially in family farms, and they're often the glue that holds everything together, because they're the communicator, they're the decision maker, they're the financial controllers. They're just amazing women, and I've certainly got them in my own family. And I just meet the coolest women that are giving it a go. And, you know, shout out to Jen Smith. You know, she's in East Gippsland. She's incredible. She's an incredible human. And we need to, you know, I think they often are so capable and resilient. And I think having a platform for them to share their stories, such as Women in Gippsland, and we have this annual event every year on International Women's Day, and it's certainly not about, you know, I'm not a hardcore feminist at all. I'm just all about equality. In fact, I really think men and women play, you know, equal roles in whatever they're doing, and we've got strengths and weaknesses. And I think the ability to appreciate them, you know, I don't know. I'm probably going down a rabbit hole. I want
to. You're totally fine.
But it's just about, for me, I'm just about the equality. Let's just celebrate for men and women for what they are. But I do recognise and thank women that have gone out there to bring the equality into the centre, because women in the past, as I said, have not even been recognised as being a farmer. Until 1992, which is really not that long ago. So there's still work to be done, and very grateful that we can, as women, be respected and seen in this very male-dominated industry that agriculture traditionally is.
Yeah. Oh, I'm interested because you obviously talk a lot about your dad, but you said that you guys grew up on the farm. Tell me a little bit about your mum, and was she a farmer?
No, mum grew up in the city, and all she wanted to do was marry a farmer, and she somehow met my dad and fell in love with him and moved to Lakes Entrance. And yeah, she has adapted very well to all of that, and mum's very, very capable and amazing. And my nana as well, like, she pioneered, you know, her and Pop came to the farm and they cleared the land, and, you know, living in a Hessian house and dirt floors and dealing with rats and mice, like, just amazing. And then, you know, I'm now the third generation essentially within this on our family farm. And, you know, they are amazing and capable. And when Dad and Pop were off on the rigs, you know, earning money to supplement the farm, it was Nana and Mum that were out milking the cows and pulling calves and all of those things. And I saw all of that growing up. And I think, but they never got the recognition or the kudos of what, you know, what Dad and Pop would do, because they are the men and they are the farmers and all that kind of stuff. They're very much there in the background. And yes, that's part of their personality and all that kind of stuff too. But, very capable. I actually remember, Mum's a nurse by trade, and I remember her doing a cesarean on a cow because the vet couldn't make it in time, and yeah, just pulling out all of the bits of the cow and putting it on a blue big tarp, and then, you know, I think she pulled it all out and got the calf out, but then the time came to be putting the bits back into the cow, I think that's when the vet did come stitch it together. But it was just cool, you know.
Literally, yeah. As only a mother could do too.
Yeah. Yeah, women have special skills and they have so much to offer.
This is a tangent, but I think when people talk about farmers having a whole range of skills, it's like mums are the exact same too. They're everything and anything.
Yeah, and everything, you know, I think the heart of family farms happens in the kitchen, and often it is the women that are the ones that are, you know, making the food. And that for me, I feel like in Australia, that's our community and that's our heart. And it's the food that brings them together. And I think, and I'm not trying to be sexist here, but country women just know how to cater and they just know how to do hospitality. Do you agree?
Yeah.
They just know how to put a good feed on. And and it just, yeah, it's just, that's what they do.
And it's such a huge part of any culture, isn't it? Like the bonding happens over meals and the stories and everything else. It is where real connection happens.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So it's the women that make that happen. So women are the glue of making everything happen. And you know, I think for myself as well, in my own home, if women are the thermostats, they're not the thermometers. So what you're bringing into your own home or whatever, into your own community, you've got the ability to, everybody gauges or sets, you know, gauges themselves off how you're operating in your little world, I think.
Mm. And I hope you give yourself a pat on the back with everything that you do as well as the farming.
I love people and I love hospitality. And I think my world is complete when, you know, I can be just surrounded by people and there's no conflict and it's just ticking along. And I just, I can't articulate that feeling for me, but that's important. And I think, we just learn from what we're surrounded by, right? So,
yeah, osmosis.
We are. And I just think, you know, I don't want to turn into my nana that you walk through the front door and she's like, you know, offering food and you say, I'm right. And then she's like demanding. And then you like, you have to eat the scone. And then you pack, you send off with a packed lunch. You know, I don't want to be that person because I probably have, like, I'm not Italian, but there's sort of those little bit of traits of the overfeeding person. So she's Nanza. Yeah, she was an absolute classic. You couldn't get out of there. She had like 26 grandchildren and we all came in and she had it nailed.
26 grandchildren.
Yeah, yeah. And she loved feeding us all and we loved it.
Oh, my God. Now, Sally, I've got two questions I want to wrap on. One is we ask everyone this question. So if you get the chance to go and chat to Year 10 students, what would you say to them and why should they consider a career in agriculture?
Great question. Yeah, I've got kids that are coming up to being in year 10 myself. And I think to them, absolutely explore it. Go out and just try lots of different things. Go onto a farm and go milk some cows and go learn how to build some fences or whatever. And keep your options open because honestly, it's changing. Like my kids go, oh, well, I won't be a farmer. Because too much hard work. Well, there's technology now, right? And there's robots to milk cows, and it's certainly heading down a much more tech savvy person's game if you want to do it that way. And I think I'm just so excited about it, and I think there is opportunities galore because that's the one industry. If we can keep feeding people, you'll never be out of a job. So if you're involved in that sector, it's a very important job. And I feel like sometimes farmers have been seen as the bottom of the class or, you know, the bottom of the, you're just a farmer or whatever. Farmers are amazing. And, you know, what do they say in life? You need a you only need a
doctor once a year or something.
Yeah, but that you need
that a farmer three times a day.
That's it. Yeah, you're the most reliable. But yeah, just get out there and have a crack and explore it and don't be lazy. There's too many lazy kids, I think, these days. They're not willing to put themselves out there and just have a crack. Expose yourself to all sorts of things.
They're not the Joneses. Joneses are working the milkshake caravan.
Oh, my kids, I tell you.
One final question, and this is something I'm just only really starting, but what's a question that you'd like me to ask a future guest at some stage? It can be on absolutely anything.
Why, yeah, here we go. What do you think the price of a 2-litre milk bottle is going to be in 10 years' time?
Ooh. I feel like that could be a bit of street talk, just go and ask people on the street. Can I ask you, what do you think it'll be?
I think it's probably going to be about $8.
In 10 years' time?
Yep. Possibly more. Possibly, it might be $10. It's going to be $8 to $10 for 2 litres, I reckon, because the milk pool's shrinking in Australia. So, don't know.
Watch this space. And we'll come back and check in with you in 2033.
Let's do that.
Now, as we said at the start, if this episode did trigger anything for you and you do want to chat to someone and get some help, please follow the links in our episode notes to Lifeline, or This Is a Conversation Starter. There are people out there who can help you, who you can chat to, and there are plenty of resources available through those two organisations. I think, as Sal talked about, she just had the most incredible relationship with her dad, and I think it's amazing to see the business that she's building and that real motivation to shift the conversation around mental health in the bush and do it through a business, which is not just delivering awesome, healthy dairy options, but actually making some significant change as well. Now, before we sign off, I did mention at the beginning that we do have our event on the 29th of March in Melbourne. If you're around the area, please head along, and we can't wait to see you soon. See ya.